Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Well, tonight is the second session of Being Content in God, and the session is entitled Warring Against Covetousness. You know, and I start thinking about the issue of contentment, the positive side of that is obviously, you know, learn to be content, learn to have our hearts in a place where we're able to enjoy and appreciate what we have. But there's no greater enemy to contentment than the issue of covetousness. And covetousness is a little bit broader than just simply wanting stuff. It goes beyond that. And so for this series that we're doing on how to be content in God, I thought we should probably spend a whole session looking at the issue of covetousness and how to hopefully unwind our hearts from some of it, and to just kind of realize a few things. One of the things that I always find helpful when I'm trying to figure out how to move forward in something, whether it's in ministry or in, you know, in your home finances or relationships or whatever it is the recognition of what is already laid as a foundation. What is the baseline of what is already there so that we can figure out how to get past it, work with it, move forward? And so one of the things that I want to bring up tonight as we start this conversation is how covetous all of us are. How much of that there already is in us, so that we can begin to look at it honestly and start to assess it. If we want to have a life content in God, then we've got to war against the things that are the greatest enemies of contentment. And I can't think of anything that will steal our heart's content, steal our peace, steal our just our ability to rest in God and just enjoy God day to day, season to season, more than the issue of covetousness. And so a couple of things as we start is I in no way think that we shouldn't have stuff. In no way think that that the physical realm is evil and so we've got to just avoid all the physical stuff like the Greeks would have proposed long ago and which is founded in some of our version of Christianity. And I don't think that way. I don't think that the Lord made anything evil. I think he made it all good. I think the scriptures are very clear that that God actually wants to give us good stuff. He wants to do amazing things for us. He wants to pour out incredible blessings. He wants to wow us with stuff. I mean, he uses stuff. He uses people, situations, prophetic words, healings, but he uses stuff. If you've ever gotten a gift and just your heart just went, oh, God, thank you. That was actually the right response, and God created that system for us to be able to receive stuff from him and enjoy it. So I'm not against stuff, and that's not what this message is. But what we can't do and what we do too often is get fixed on the stuff. We get our head and our mind and our heart wrapped around things, even wrapped around situation shifting, wrapped around stuff lining up the way that we want. I'm looking at Exodus 20, verse 17, and this is the Lord. As soon as he brings Israel up out of Egypt, so it's the first time that they're a nation that's now being led theocratically, where the Lord is leading the nation of Israel in a way that they can discern. It's the first time they've been identified as a separate people with their own ability to self-govern and all that. This is kind of the establishment of Israel, if you will. And so there are some things that happened in those early weeks and months of Israel's beginning point as a nation that are very important. One of which is this that the Lord established in Exodus 20. He says, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servants, or his ox, or his donkey, or, if I haven't made it clear, anything that belongs to your neighbor. You're not to covet anything. Now, what's interesting about this is this issue of covetousness goes beyond the material stuff, because he even points to the wife issue. He's like, you think that your neighbor's wife is better or better cook or better looking or better whatever. Do not long for her. Do not long for the stuff that your neighbor has, for the position in life that your neighbor has. Don't long for anything your neighbor has. Don't look at your neighbor's life and go, ooh, I gotta have that. I must have that. I want that. I've got to take strides to get that. The concept of keeping up with the Joneses, if you will. But it's more than that. It's the things in our life that are not aligned the way that we want them becoming consumed, becoming preoccupied, becoming focused on getting those things. Now, it's kind of an interesting, you know, way to hold our heart in the tension, because the Lord wants to give us good stuff. We just can't get focused. We can't get distracted by those good things and therefore wind up pursuing those things instead of pursuing the things that the Lord really wants us to pursue. At the same time, it's okay to want for those things if we can kind of have a soft want in our heart with a very grateful and glad-hearted response when the Lord does those things for us. So this issue of covetousness, it's the reason that I think it's so much in us is because it's so tricky to walk the line of having faith, of praying, of seeking the Lord, of hearing the Lord say, I want to do good things for you. I mean, who hears the Lord say that and then doesn't immediately start to imagine what those good things might be? That's fine, a little. It's when the imagining goes too far. It's when the longing in the heart gets set. There's this something about this word covetousness. It's different than knowing that good things are going to happen, wanting good things to happen. It's a locking in. It's a dissatisfaction with what we have because all we can see is what's in front of us. And it's this, this concept that's like, you know, man, you just can't wait until your vacation. Your vacation is, you know, 6 weeks off, 8 weeks off, whatever. And so as a result of longing for this vacation, you can't even enjoy life today. You can't even enjoy today, tomorrow. You can't enjoy your interactions with your friends, with your family, because all you're thinking about is this thing off in the distance. It's a real issue in our culture, and it's not nailed down to or tied merely to physical stuff. It's anything. Anything that our heart would get distracted in longing to try to acquire. Well, this is obviously the total enemy of contentment, because contentment would be, I'm just happy right now. I'm just glad I got what I got. I'm just glad to be God's and like walk through life. The opposite, covetousness, is this, I am totally discontent until I get that. It's being fixed on something, and that something can be material or immaterial. It's just that covetous longing, that wanting, that distraction, that dissatisfaction with the current until I can acquire that thing, whatever it might be. Ecclesiastes 4, 6 through 8 tells us that one of our main problems is that we're always seeking after more. There's this subtle lie that all of us like have believed to some degree at different times. Maybe we're cured of it right now, but that doesn't mean we're cured indefinitely. This issue of covetousness, it sneaks back in. I mean, it is tricky. It's like in a rainstorm when you got the windshield wipers on in the car, man, you run those windshield wipers and all the water's off the windshield, but I'll tell you what, it's only a matter of seconds before you got more water to be wiping. And it's the issue in our lives, this issue of covetousness. It's a constant struggle. It's a constant friction. And if we don't own up to the reality that we're constantly being bombarded, especially in our culture with all the billboards and all the this and all of that, constantly being bombarded with those raindrops that need to be dealt with again in kind of washing off the covetousness, it'll sneak up on us and it'll get us. Look at Ecclesiastes 4:6. Better a handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. There was a man all alone who was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. This is Solomon probably subtly speaking about himself, who had all the wealth, who had all these different experiences. I mean, more than wealth, he had bought every vacation he could ever have wanted. He had bought every life pleasure you could possibly imagine. He experienced the best of everything, and he's saying, it's better to have tranquility with just a little bit of stuff in your hand, just enough to be able to make it, than to have more than that, to have way more than is needed. But in order to keep that was that you acquired in addition, your heart left, you know, the place of tranquility, the place of peace. In order to have those things, you had to leave the lifestyle of contentment. He says it's better to just have a little and just have tranquility, have contentment. Have a life that's like happy-go-lucky and that you're pleased with the Lord and with your life and with how things are than this constant striving after more. He says there's no end to the toil. He says there is no marker that once you hit it, you'll be okay. Well, if I could just get this job, if I could just overcome this thing, if I could just get this car, if I could just get married, if I could just have kids, if I could just retire. I mean, it's like there's no end to it. There's no end. And this is the point about contentment. Contentment has nothing to do with our circumstances. But there is this covetousness in us that is constantly longing for more. It's constantly, and it's a war that is waged against our contentment. He says, there's a man alone, no end to his toil, and yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. He'd already overcome all this stuff. He'd already acquired all these things. He already had all these life experiences. It's like, when is enough? He says, there's never enough. We'll never feel like we've gotten everything that we want. So our issue actually is an internal one and not a circumstantial one. Our issue is actually, I need to learn to be content with God with how things are yesterday. Because if I can't get to that point, I will never be content when I hit the next mile marker or get up over the next hill. I will never be content. The issue isn't my stuff, it's me. The problem in the equation is me. I am the problem. I am covetous. I am always wanting for more. 1 Timothy 6, the passage that we're really keying in on for this whole series. I told you last week, and as I kind of introduced the series, that the Lord just dropped this verse in a very strong way into my heart, gave it to me a couple of times in about a 12-hour period from different angles. And just looking at this, and there's this problem that we're eager for money. So now looking specifically at the natural stuff that we're constantly feeling like we're in lack and wanting more of, and there's this warning that there's a curse on the life, a curse on the life of the person who becomes preoccupied with attaining wealth. When there's a preoccupation, look at what it says. It says, for the love of money, I'm using the word preoccupation because I think it's at least part of what love of money means. There's this preoccupation with money, and it's the root of all kinds of evil. And some that have been eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Eager for money. I want to find a way in my own heart where there's not an eagerness for money, an eagerness for more, an eagerness. Again, and it's this tension because when the Lord makes you promises, of course you want those things. And the word is filled with promises. Things like given, it will be given to you. Things like I have a life that I wanna bless you. I wanna pour out good gifts. I'm a good father. I long to answer you with good gifts. There's all these promises. But there's just something about that word eager that I think is the connection point of covetousness. It goes beyond the yes, Lord, please do that for me. Lord, I want to receive these things to this eagerness. When I think eager, I think willing to do almost anything to get what they're after. You know? This eager. And it says some that are eager for money, oh my gosh, they've been pierced with so many griefs and they've entered into all kinds of evil. But it's not the money. It's the eagerness. It's the preoccupation. I'm just in this series, I'm just trying to ask myself the questions. Am I preoccupied? Am I preoccupied with that thing I don't have? With that position I have not attained to? With that thing that I've been praying for but I don't have yet? Am I preoccupied? Because if I am, that's probably not healthy. Because it's this loving and this longing for something. That's not where my affections belong. And it's the opposite of contentment. And so my heart then begins to walk away from being content in the Lord and starts being fixed on stuff God made instead of the God who made the stuff. Oh, it's such a simple switch in the heart. It's the rain on the windshield. You're going to have to wipe it off again and again. And I just think if we know that going into this, if we hear this message in this series, and if we can allow it to wash over us, then we can go, again, today I need to check my heart. Am I preoccupied? Are there things that I am fixed on, that I am trying to make happen, that I want to get, that I want to see happen in my life? Are there these things? Because it's the war against the contentment in our heart. Now, the problem that we have is this issue of covetousness. It envies and it seeks to spend more on ourselves and on our pleasures. There's a big difference between wanting to have more so that we can do more with it in the kingdom, and wanting to have more so that we can build up our own selves, our own name, our own houses, our own lives. There's a big difference. I mean, the Lord loves and constantly commends the concept of generosity and cheerful giving. Well, you can't be generous if you don't have something to give. I mean, something could be, you know, a bubble gum. But I mean, if you don't have the bubble gum, you can't give the bubble gum away. So there's nothing wrong with wanting bubble gum if you plan to give bubble gum away. The problem is, I just cannot wait to build myself a house of bubble gum. I want so much. Like this longing for more, for our own pleasures, the way that James addresses it is, he says, James 4:2, says, you lust and you murder, you are envious and you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you ask with wrong motives so that you can spend it on your pleasures. God's not unwilling to give you these things, but there's something about us that just keeps longing for more, not because we're thinking about how we can build up the kingdom, but because we're thinking about how we can use it for ourselves. This covetousness, I just want to challenge all of us for that covetous nature to just be warred against, that we wouldn't constantly be looking for more. You know, I feel pretty lucky on this particular point, because I feel like the Lord, in a very short period of time, at the very beginning of my walk in Christ, dealt so violently with so much of this. I grew up in a very nice home. I grew up in a very nice part of town. I always had everything I needed. I had jobs in high school that provided more than I could, you know, spend. I mean, I was the rich kid in a lot of ways. I had everything I needed and then some. And I came to know the Lord, and it was immediately after that, I mean, within a period of months, that I became one of the poorest people I've ever met. I became so poor because the way that the Lord told me to spend my time did not allow me to make any money. So I was just going to have whatever money came in, and it was almost nothing for years. And so I lived off of almost nothing for years, and I was happy. I was so content. Like, I had $100 a month as my entire budget. And I just figured out a way to make it work. And I never cared. Like, I didn't have stuff. I'd be like, who cares? I got God. I was so happy. And I went from this bratty, covetous, you know, rich kid kind of a scenario to poor and delighted. It just have God and have nothing else. It didn't even bother me. And I feel like the Lord was just in his kindness really allowing me to experience two sides of that pendulum swing, to just kind of be able to see what Paul said. I know what it is to have plenty, and I know what it is to be in want. And I've learned that secret of being content. There is a way to be content with so little. The problem is that it keeps haunting us and coming back again and again. And so I know some of us in this room, I've known some of you for quite some time, I know that this has been something that many of you have dealt with head on in your life. And maybe it's time to do it again. Maybe it's not. You work that out with the Lord. I just know that dealing with it a year or 5 or 10 ago does not mean that it's done. It comes back again and again because there is something about our nature that causes us to ever be longing for more, ever be wanting that next thing. We need to be content with a few things. I want to get to this point. Paul, in that 1 Timothy 6 verse, let's look at another component of it, another piece of that, 1 Timothy 6, focus passage. But godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. Now, these are not the only two things that I think that we can find in a general way contentment in, but I want to focus on these two and a few others. When Paul's saying this, he wasn't even referring to food as in the greatest foods that you could ever experience and clothing of the most lavish sort. So if you never have a car or you never have a house, you never have these things, so long as you have epic food and epic clothing, you're okay. It wasn't even what he was saying. He's talking about the most basic, the most elementary version. Now, I mean, there's a few foods, there are a few plates, a few things in life that I just like, I love to eat. And I'll go out of my way to make that happen because I love them. They're just delicious. And I just enjoy them so much. But that's not what Paul's talking about. He's not talking about the most incredible foods. He's talking about white rice without salt and a half-cooked fish if you can get it. I mean, he's just talking about like the plainest of foods. And he says, I mean, the idea is, I mean, if you can put some salt on it, do it. But find a way to be content with the white rice. Find a way to be content with the simplest of foods, the simplest of clothing. It doesn't have to be the perfect this or the perfect that. And Paul is looking at this situation, and this is a guy who's been roaming around the continents, you know, in the Middle East and over into Asia and over into the west part of Europe. And he's been, you know, wandering around. He says, if we have food and clothing, there is a way in God's grace to be content with that. That we got food in our belly and clothing on our skin so that the sun doesn't get us and the cold doesn't kill us. Finding a way. And I think about that and I'm like, this just barrels down to the absolute most basic form of like food and shelter, like being able to make it in life. And I'm thinking about us at our worst state. I mean, for what we've had in our past to date and what we have in our perceivable future, throw in the wild card of the last days and who knows where this goes, but in our perceivable future and in our past, we have always had more than white rice and no salt. I mean, we've always had it better than that. And when it comes to clothing, we've always had better than, you know, 6 old t-shirts sewn together to make a shirt. You know, we've always had better. All of us. I mean, it's like, and yet Paul's saying, if you have even the most basic, there is a way to be content in God. And I want to challenge you to strive for it. Well, another one that I'll throw out in this concept of being content with what it is that we've been dealt. Being content with the capacity that you have for food. Being content with the capacity that you have for clothing, and I'll even throw in shelter in there, whatever that winds up looking like, whether you're living with some friends or you've got an apartment or a home or whatever. Finding a way to be content. I'll also say this, your current relationships. It was something Paul relied on heavily. He doesn't mention it in this passage, but frequently in the epistles, Paul talks about how he leans so heavily on his current relationships. And the reason I say current is because any of you who've been loving Jesus for a while recognize that there is such a thing as a current friend not being one forever, possibly. That we've all got some stories of those that were friends that we were running with, that for whatever reason, they moved and we lost contact. They fell away from the faith, heaven forbid. They just got upset and distanced. That there were those that were in your circle of friends that aren't anymore, but you have relationships today. Family, friends, those you're discipling or being discipled by, this community. You have current relationships. And I just say, what a blessing to find contentment in whatever your sphere of relationships looks like today. And then tomorrow and next year and in 10 years. And if that changes, if the current sphere of relationships looks different today than it does in 10 years, find a way in the relationships you have in 10 years to find contentment in what it is that the Lord has provided you in the relationships that you have at that point. Just that contentment in relationships. We were created for that. I just think, what if I could just get to a point where I was excited to wake up in the morning because I got a dry, you know, old biscuit for food, because I got to put on clothes that had a couple of holes in the armpits, and because I had some people in my life that loved me, if it was just my life, you know? I mean, if I just had one person in my life that loved me, just to enjoy those relationships that I have, what if I could get down to the basics of that and go, you know what, if I could just have that, I'll be okay. I'll be fine. contentment with our finances. And I'm gonna say with what we have and with God in our midst as a result of this. Look at what Jesus pointed out in Luke 3:14. He's talking to these soldiers, and they're trying to figure out how the kingdom works and how Jesus is, it's not the main thing that they're after in how content Jesus is, but you just know Jesus just walked with such a contentment about him that it was just magnetic. The people wanted to be around him and find out what he was about. And they're asking him about life and about salvation. It says, some soldiers asked him, "What shall we do?" And he replied, "Don't extort money and don't accuse people falsely. Be content with your pay." I think about that beautiful principle that could be applied to all of us at every year, at every job, in every situation. Be content with your pay. Find a way to make it work. It's what God has given you in this season. Find a way to make it work. Be content with it instead of constantly striving. This is the issue here of this covetousness. These guys were breaking rules, breaking laws, were causing problems, were covert in their, you know, their agenda against people, tricking people, lying to people, stealing from people. They were covetous in order to get more money. He says, find a way to be content with your pay. Another passage that deals with the same issue, Hebrews 13:5, author of Hebrews sums up the subject of contentment in the simplest of terms. It says, keep your lives free from the love of money and be content with what you have. So there it is again. Same thing that Jesus was saying. Be content with what you have. Well, I don't have a living room set into this and that. Just be content with what you've got. Well, I don't have this situation at my work. Be content with what you've got. Well, I don't have all these extra relationships or all this stuff going on. Just be content with what you have. And in the area of the finances specifically, be free from the love of money, this longing to always have more stuff. He says, because God said, never will I leave you and never will I forsake you. Now, that's interesting because the author of Hebrews here goes straight to the point of contentment. I mean, we talked about food and relationships and clothes and money, but none of those are the issue. The issue is, when the author of Hebrews says this, he says, keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have because. Be content with what you have because God is with you. You have God. Be content because you have God. And if you have nothing else, you have God. Be content with that. And the fact is, you do have more than just that. Because you do have some food. You do have some clothing. You do have some relationships. You do have some blessings in life. But if you didn't, be content because God will not leave you or forsake you. He likes you. He's with you. You have God. This is the issue of contentment. Is if we can really look at life with the simplest of terms. If you have $1 billion and don't have God, you're broke. But if you have God and someone steals your $1 billion, you're still a gajillionaire. I mean, the issue of contentment is about the revelation of who lives inside of you. You have God. You have God. He's all we need, like for real. And if for some reason you go a long season without food and you die, you have God. You're okay. If for some reason someone steals all your clothes and you run around naked for 3 years, seriously, get some clothes. But if you did and the elements weather against you and the sun beats down on you and you die in the cold, cold rain, you have God. You have God. We're so covetous. We're so discontent. We are bratty little children. I don't have this. I don't have this. We have God, the living God. He lives inside of us. We have the absolute best. There is no comparison. If you had 10,000 of the finest things, the best of this, the perfect job, the perfect that, whatever it is that we had that could possibly fill up our desire bucket, it doesn't even compare to what we already have. We have God. We have the most jacked up perspectives. We have God living in us. We're in relationship with him. He says, I won't leave you. I won't forsake you. And we're not content. We're constantly wanting more. We're selfish little children. We've got serious issues because we have God. He's so amazing. His friendship, his strength, his word, his spirit uplifting us, his instruction to lead us to be a lamp to our feet. We have God. We have God. And we're discontent because we don't have fill in the blank on the Mad Lib. Like, whatever we don't have, so what? So what? So what? Keep your lives free from the love of and fill in the blank. Because God won't leave you. He's with you. You have God. Again, this idea, I made up a term. I don't know how real it is, but I like it. The soft want. This concept of wanting for things that are okay to want for, to long for, to desire. Lord, I'd love this in my life. If you do this, Lord, help me get the job. I mean, but for us to keep our heart's connection to those things soft instead of for us to enter into covetousness. I mean, there's so much that the Word talks about where the Lord actually says, pray for stuff so that I'll give it to you. I mean, how could the Lord say that if the whole thing was entirely evil? I mean, that system doesn't work. So there is a way to pray for and even press in for the things that the Lord says he wants us to have, or that he offers for us to have, or for our situations to get better, or for us to get the thing. There is a way to be able to do that and it still be like completely holy, godly, and part of the kingdom process. I'm just thinking of it in the terms of a soft want instead of a preoccupation. The soft want of the heart. Lord, yes, do that. But not all I'm going to think about until it happens is that thing. All I'm going to labor for with all of my energies is that thing. Just watching that balance in our heart. But that's where the enemy comes in. See, I don't think anybody in this room has given into covetousness as a way of life with any sort of intentionality. I don't believe that at all. But what happens is, because there is so much in the Word that says, pray for this. The Lord desires to give you good gifts. You know, long for this, do this. Because there is so much instruction about things to come into our life through the hand of God that we don't have today, but that if we pray and partner with him in the place of faith, in the place of prayer, that we could have tomorrow. Because there's so much of that instruction, the enemy is a roaring lion seeking to devour, and he's watching the motives of our heart. He's watching to see when he can interject that covetousness. He's waiting for those moments of weakness. He's waiting for those moments when you do what the Bible says, but you don't guard your heart well. And he's looking for those opportunities to shoot in covetousness. He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. We know from John 10. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and destroy. But I have come that you might have life and you have it to the full. The way that the enemy works to create covetousness, is to use partial truths to take us away from our main focus. The issue is to redirect and distort our faith. The enemy wants to redirect faith to wind up causing covetousness in us. The thing that the Lord said, you know, to seek after, that it's okay to pray for. More than okay, he even wants us to pray for. If we're not careful, the enemy comes in and distorts those things and says, you're not giving enough of your thoughts and your time and your attention and your life to seeing this thing happen. And that's when there's this shift that happens, that instead of us leaving it in God's hands for God to do the thing, we start to take the control into our own hands, and that's when I believe covetousness comes into the picture. It's the constant effort of the enemy to get us out of balance and to get our focus off of God and off of the kingdom. I mean, again, it's like, how do you do this? How do you have the thoughts but not have your focus and your heart given over to it? It's a mystery. That we all have to walk in the tension of this, because the truth of the matter is that it is the purpose of the Lord that we pursue the kingdom as our primary pursuit. Look at Matthew 6, 31 through 34, a verse you guys know well. We've talked about it, I don't know, 100 times around here. But look at this passage that talks about what our purpose is. This is how you know if you're getting off. This is how you know if you're turning away from the purposes of the Lord. This is how you know if you're getting redirected, if the enemy is being effective in distorting your faith, in turning you away from the purposes of the Lord. Here's what it is. It says, don't worry, saying, what shall we eat and drink and wear? The pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. This is the same thing that Paul was talking about. If we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. He says, don't be concerned about those things, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Your purpose is to love God and to seek his kingdom. To seek his kingdom first. You don't have to seek the other things. It says if you'll seek God and his kingdom, God will give you the other things. The problem is we're trying to both seek God and make those other things happen in our life. And what we've done is we put ourselves in the position of God. God says, I want to give you these things. Your purpose is to seek my kingdom, not seek those things. Don't seek those things. Don't spend yourself. Don't become preoccupied. Don't invest your heart in the seeking after of the things. Seek first the kingdom and trust me that I'll give you those things. There's this balance. There's this balance that somehow each one of us, we've all had victories, times of victory in this. So while it's mysterious and I can't articulate it, you in your own heart have done it right at least once. And you know how to go back and do it again. Somehow, there is this way to both pray for the things that you want to see happen in your life, the promotion, the new job, the fixed car, the more finances, the food that you love, the whatever, the spouse. There is a way to pray for those things and yet not lose your focus from your primary pursuit in life, which is to seek God and to seek his kingdom. And when you find yourself out of the boundary lines of that primary pursuit, you've started to enter down the road of covetousness. Now, it's real easy to repent of. I mean, it's real easy once you can identify it. And that's what I want to end with tonight. I want to talk about how do we respond to covetousness? How do we respond to it? Now, this is going to be a bit broad because I can't hit every situation. Hopefully, we've talked about covetousness in the broad sense enough now that you can find a way to apply some of these principles to your specific situations. But we need to recognize that living in covetousness is not an option. It will destroy us from within. This preoccupation, I'm thinking about the stories. I mean, obviously, I wasn't around during the gold rush of way back when everybody was running out to California to get rich. But I just hear the stories, you see the old documentaries and stuff about people and the crazy stuff they would do in order to get gold. They got gold fever. It was this longing, this willingness. I mean, they'd kill people over gold. You're talking about killing people over colored dirt. I mean, it's like they're killing people. And there's this preoccupation, like they'd forget to eat for days. They're just, you know, panhandling the gold out of the little, you know, bucket thing or whatever. And they're the sifter, and they're just there by the river, and they're digging, and there's this constant preoccupation. It's like they're totally off base. They became totally preoccupied. And it destroyed marriages and lives. And while that's one example, it could be anything. It could be your career. You could be so fixed on your career, it'll destroy you. Destroy your family. It could be stuff. I don't know how many times we've heard the stories of the dad that he was just so fixed on providing all this stuff for his family that he wasn't even there as a dad, and all the kids wanted was a dad. They didn't care if they had the cool couch. They wanted dad. This issue of covetousness will destroy us. You're not immune to it. Just because you've got whatever, you know, background and went to whatever, you know, church growing up, that does not buy you a get out of jail free card. Covetousness will destroy you. It's a lifestyle we cannot afford to embrace. We have got a war against it. But if that's the case, how do we do it? What do we do? What are some simple components of warring against it? Well, the first is heed the warning. I think that's really tonight's message. To heed the warning about covetousness, that it's not okay. That preoccupation in your heart for that thing, it's unhealthy. To live the life of one thing, to love the Lord and to seek his kingdom, to do the will of God. But there's this preoccupation, and you go, how do I want it but not be preoccupied by it? You've got to figure that out. You have to journey that with the Lord, because that preoccupation, it's keeping you from contentment. That preoccupation is keeping you from your destiny. That preoccupation is keeping you from stuff you could have done with emotional energy today that you didn't have the emotional energy for because you already spent it on your preoccupation, on something that's not healthy. Seek first the kingdom and my righteousness, and I'll give you the stuff. Don't become preoccupied by the stuff. Don't make your life's pursuit that thing. Make your life's pursuit God. And he'll give you the things. First is heed the warning. Again, the 1 Timothy 6 passage we've been looking at, that warning. Those who want to get rich, those who love money, those who are eager for money, then talks about all the negatives, that longing for more. So the first is, heed the warning. The second point, give away what you have. Give away what you can give away in that area. Now again, this doesn't apply to every situation perfectly. But if you find yourself at a place where you're living in a covetous way in your heart, I want to encourage you to start to give some of your stuff away. I remember when I first came to the Lord. That was a wild season in my life. When I first came to know the Lord, I was confronted early with how covetous I was. And I knew I was covetous because I was skipping school to get more stuff. I was collecting techno music like it was going to go out of style. I was skipping school. I'd leave school 2 or 3 times a day to go home to make sure my modem was still downloading more techno songs. Because the modems in that day were just janky. They'd stop. And so I'd have to go home, make sure it would do it, you know, connect back up or whatever. And I'd go home and I'd connect it and come back to school. I mean, it was crazy. It was a bad deal. And I realized I was collecting. I was just like so covetous, this never-ending longing for more, this insatiable hunger. I must have this. I was preoccupied. And I came to know the Lord in the process of that, and I'm like, I feel like I cannot continue to both love God and carry this intense covetousness for techno music. Like, I need to do something about this. And so I can remember somewhere in there, I just like got this crazy idea. I'm going to just get rid of all of it in one day. And so I gave somebody 200 CDs and I deleted 6,000 techno songs off my hard drive. In a moment. Well, I say a moment. It took more like 45 minutes to delete. But I had them all selected, and I remember pushing the delete button and just sitting there. Oh, no, not that one. Yeah, that one too. I just remember all of them going away. It was one of the most freeing things I've ever done in my entire life. After that, I felt free as a bird. One, I had more time. Two, I had more emotional energy to love God because I wasn't longing and loving after this totally pointless thing. It's like, and I have found that now after, you know, years of walking that out, that like now that doesn't have a hold on me. Like I can have some music and it doesn't bug me. Like that doesn't, it's not, it doesn't own me at all. But there was a season in there where, man, that was a decision I needed to make for me. Now, I don't know if that's you, but I just want to tell you, there are some people who sometimes need to do that crazy thing and give away all the thing. I mean, there is a place for that just to free your own heart up. I mean, would you rather have the stuff and have your heart hindered and dampened, you know, to the things of God? Or would you rather just get rid of the stuff and be free? I mean, And again, you got to work that out. I'm in a place now where I got some songs and it doesn't bug me. But there was a time where, boy, howdy, it bugged me. It would have bugged you. You wouldn't have liked me then. I'd have been just talking about techno music. We couldn't have had a conversation about anything else. So I'm going to say, give away. Find a way to give away. If you're struggling with covetousness and you can feel it, maybe it's crept back in. You dealt with it, you know, 5, 10 years ago, whatever, and it's crept back in. I want to encourage you, find a way to deal with it violently. Give something away or give a bunch of stuff away. You work all that out with the Lord, but it's freeing to do it. And I'm not talking about the stuff you don't want. I'm talking about the stuff you do want. I'm not talking about the old, you know, pair of this or the old thing of that that you don't like anymore. That won't touch you. You don't care. You weren't using it anyway. I'm talking about the one that you like. That one. There is something freeing about that. That's good. That's healthy. That's not weird. That's health. If you find yourself in a covetous situation about something, about some situation, find a way to give that up. So give it up if it's a physical thing. Maybe if it's the, you know, the longing for that position or that whatever, just give it up before the Lord and be like, God, I'm done. I'm not even going to talk to you about it for a while. That's a healthy place to be sometimes. If you find yourself preoccupied, war against that thing. Third, then go on to live generously. This continues to re-free up your heart. To live generously. Instead of looking at finances as how can I build myself and build my own and build my this, finding ways to give away money. We talk about money here a lot because none of you would continue to exist in America if you didn't have access to it. So it is a very big deal in your life. And as a very big deal, it plays a very big role in your spirituality. It plays a very big role in you as a Christian. And the safest thing I know to do is to be generous in your giving of it away so that it does not own your heart. Don't do it as a one-time thing only. Live that way. Find a way to live generously. And the last thing I'll just say, as you heed the warning about not being covetous, recognizing that covetousness will destroy your capacity to be content. This whole series is about contentment in God, to enjoy God today, to not have anything in the way of me being able to just like love God, enjoy God, be God's for my profile, wherever it is that I get to write about. The main thing is I'm God's. Instead of I got this and I do this and I'm about that. I mean, I'm God's and be content with that. This series is about that. If you find that after you have recognized that there's some covetousness in your life and you're trying to give this stuff away, you're trying to, you know, live with some generosity, pray for a free heart. Prayer goes a long way. Lord, it's me again. You're a mess. I love you dearly, but I'm a mess and I need you to help me. I got this thing in my heart and it owns me right now. Just be so honest. I don't want to be preoccupied. You think I like this? I don't want this. I don't want to live with this covetousness. I don't want to live with this preoccupation. I don't want to live with I'm seeking first the stuff and I'm also doing some kingdom activity along the way. I want to seek first your kingdom. I don't like this. God, help me undo this. Free me, help me. Lord, give me ideas about what I can do. And then listen to those ideas. Lord, just help me. Undo me. That way I can be all the me I can be. Like that I can fulfill my destiny and the purposes that you have for me. Talk to the Lord about it. I'll tell you what, if you'll talk to God about it with regularity, he will work this out in you. He'll help you. If you'll be open enough not to talk about the thing you don't have. Don't have that conversation anymore. If you're in a place of preoccupation, instead, if you'll have the conversation, Lord, help me not be preoccupied by this. Help me not be longing for this in such a way that distracts me from you, distracts me from life, causes me to not appreciate or to diminish appreciation for all the good things you've given me. I don't want to be whiny and complaining. I want to be content and fulfilled in you. Help me. You don't even have to give me anything else. Just fix me. Just deal with this issue in me. Help me, help me, help me, help me. If you'll pray that and you'll keep talking to God about it, the very fact that your heart is in dialogue with the Lord at that level of openness, the Lord will deal with you. He'll help you. Because he wants that out of you more than you do. But what happens so often is we'll have that conversation. We hear a message like this or something. We'll have that conversation once or twice, and then we go right back to the focus, the idolizing of that thing that we don't have. That being fixed on that thing that we don't have. And it's stealing our contentment.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.